This is Lewis.
And this is Ian.
And welcome to 101 Films You Should Have Seen.
Probably.
So this week is a special one.
Yes, because I have just said probably for the 50th time.
No way.
Actually, no, because in the specials I also probably. But if we just pretend the specials and everything else doesn't exist, if we just count the numbered podcasts, this is the 50th time I have said the word probably. Because,
wow.
Lewis,
yeah.
It is...
the 50th 101 Films You Should Have Seen Probably podcast.
Yes.
Exciting. We're at 50 already. Only 50. How long have we been doing this?
Not quite.
Oh my God. When will it end?
Well, here's some stats for you. We've been doing this since October 2011.
Wow.
And, you know, that's fine. Just doing one a week. There's only been 50 weeks since October 2011.
Are you sure about that? Are you sure?
As far as I understand, you've said the word interesting nearly 3 million times.
Wow, that's really interesting.
Interesting, yeah. I've mispronounced over 4,000 words.
Mispronounced, I think, is the way you actually say it.
Those are the stats.
It's impressive stats.
Yeah. So what are our plans for the future, Lewis? We've hit 50.
We've now got over 50 likes
yes.
on our Facebook page.
Yes. Not actually, just to correct you there, not over 50. We're back, as we speak, as we record, we're bang on 50.
Brilliant. So by the 101st podcast, I'd like 1 million likes on Facebook, please. So can we try and reach that goal of 1 million?
Yeah, 1 million. Well, yeah, target million, that's what we'll call it.
That's it.
Million likes. Is there anything that has 1 million likes? Perhaps we shouldn't practice. Let's have 1,001 likes. That's more realistic.
No, 1 million.
1,000,001.
1,000,001. It has to be 1,000,001. Like that man who said his girlfriend would have sex with him or something if she got 1,000,000 likes, or with his office co-worker or something.
What?
Weird.
What?
That was on Facebook. That was a real thing.
Oh, that's nonsense though, isn't it?
Wow. She promised.
I don't think I don't think there are 1 million people on Facebook. Come on, Lewis.
There's not even
1 million people in the world.
If we get 1 million likes, we're going to have sex.
Oh, my God. I'm not going to commit to that.
No, nor am I. That's a terrible idea.
That's the potential to become a big internet meme.
Oh,
if it went viral...
We don't want to be a
then
meme.
You'd get my viral. And then
keep your viral away from me.
Right, so... big plans for the future, though.
Big
live
plans.
Podcasts.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe, possibly.
We said we're going to do that for the 50th.
Yeah,
never quite got around to it.
We'll do it for like the 65th or something. we're going to do things, new formats of podcasts as well.
Oh, yeah.
We came up with a couple of ideas that we're going to roll out at some point in the future.
God, you sound like such a manager.
Oh, yes. We're going to do some commentaries, which we've always been saying we're going to do. We never got around to it.
Basically, we're going to get pissed and watch a film and then talk about
probably
it.
Probably Zardoz. And... yeah, it's going to be great. It's going to be great.
It's going to be awesome.
So look forward to that. But our 50th one, we thought we'd try and do a famous film.
Yeah, a big one. This is a big film.
A big film. Yeah, that's what we wanted, something that we could really get our teeth into. And wow, you're going to need a lot of teeth to get into this one.
I tell you what, I can't bloody believe you've never seen this film before.
I know. It's crazy, isn't it? I don't know how I've not seen this film.
Anyway, it's Apocalypse Now,
in case you're wondering what it is. Well, everyone has seen the title.
Second film from Francis Ford Coppola on the list.
Yeah, Apocalypse Now. You'd seen this? When did you see this, Lewis?
I saw this years ago. I must have been a teenager.
Yeah, back in Nam.
I've seen it quite a few times, although I always seem to miss the beginning. So it was kind of nice to watch the beginning again this time. I was like, oh my God, Harrison Ford's in it. I forgot.
I've seen bits and bobs. It's obviously had a massive cultural impact, so I'd seen it mocked on The Simpsons and things like that. You know.
Well, yeah.
But for some reason, this is one of many films that slipped through the cracks. I just not got around to watching it.
You have massive cracks.
Massive
cracks.
It's weird, isn't it? It's weird. The more films we do, the more I'm shocked at how few films I've seen.
And yet you've seen Bubba Hotep.
I have. Yeah, of course, that's a good film.
Better than Apocalypse Now?
That's a weird one to compare. Would Apocalypse Now be better with Bruce Campbell in it? Probably.
Oh, I see where you're coming from there. So what's the pitch, Ian?
Well, this is an American version of It Ain't Our Fault, Mum. The classic British sitcom.
That's quite an obscure sitcom reference there.
Yeah, I suppose so. What's the plot, Lewis?
The plot is, it's based on Joseph Conrad's A Heart of Darkness, where Martin Sheen plays Willard, who gets sent on a secret mission to go upriver deep into Cambodia through Vietnam, where the Americans aren't even supposed to be, and go and assassinate Colonel Kurtz, who's gone rogue.
Yes, gone rogue. He's killing people, got his own kind of secret army, needs to be taken down. Of course, Colonel Kurtz is being played by...
Marlon Brando. Fatty Brando.
Yeah, Fatty Brando.
Big old Brando.
Good grief, yeah, we'll talk about that in a bit. Now, obviously, coming to this fresh... And it comes with a huge cultural weight, doesn't it? You know, you go into this knowing that this is a classic.
It's just so influential, this film. There was a huge swathe of kind of Vietnam movies that came after it that were directly inspired by it, and probably wouldn't have been made if this hadn't been had such a big impact.
No, quite. And going into it, there is a part of me that wants to not like it. Just to kind of, you know, jazz things up a little bit. Just to be able to say, oh yeah, I saw that classic. Yeah.
Overrated.
Yeah, exactly. There is, I can't deny that there is a little bit of me that really wanted to come here, sit down with you, and just see the shocked look on your face as I started to run it down. But I can't do that because it is brilliant.
Yeah,
it is a modern classic. It is possibly one of... possibly the best war film I've ever seen, if you don't count Dad's Army, the British version, the actual film version of the British sitcom.
I can't believe you've seen Dad's Army, the movie, and you haven't seen Apocalypse Now.
I've seen Dad's Army, the movie, about three times, I haven't seen Apocalypse Now. But
the
yes.
Topsy-turvy world you live in.
But, yeah, as I said, not only one of the, probably the best war film I've ever seen, maybe one of the best films, point blank. Oof. It is leapt up. It is in now probably my top 10.
Wow.
I think it is brilliant.
Fantastic. Well, and I'm glad to hear that.
You watched it again as well.
I love it.
Now, what would be perfect for you to say, on second watch, didn't really like it. Doesn't hold together.
I think a lot of people, a lot of critics say, the first two thirds, amazing. Absolutely amazing. The last third, perhaps not quite so good. Would you agree with that kind of summation?
No.
No?
No, because I think it becomes more and more... as the further they go up the river, the madder it gets. Mm. Which, to me, whether purposely or just by accident, kind of matches the American experience of in Vietnam. The further they got into it, the madder it got.
Yeah, I kind of...
and more sort of disconnected from reality it became.
I kind of agree with you as well, because I remember thinking that the first time I watched it, thinking it kind of tailed off a little bit towards the end. But on subsequent viewings, I enjoy the ending more and more, and it kind of veers off into philosophical territory, whereas before there was a lot of bombast and kind of like shouting and explosions and things like that. And then at the end, it just goes very introspective, still with the horror. The horror. But, you know, it's from a different kind of viewpoint. Yeah, it gets better and better every time I watch it.
Yeah, exactly. And incredible cast.
Yeah. And Martin Sheen goes above and beyond the Call of Duty.
Yeah, it really does, yeah. Again, we'll talk a little bit about that further into the podcast. But just every element, the look of it, the soundtrack.
Yeah, it's phenomenal. I mean, just tiny little details, like the sound of chopper blades kind of saging into, you know, the fan at the beginning, a very famous kind of opening sequence.
And it says a lot. There's a kind of, yeah, there's a lot to discuss. It's not just an obvious what the film means.
Yeah, definitely. You know, is it anti-war? Is it pro-war?
Yeah, I mean, there's kind of questions around it. And not only that, it has a batshit crazy making of story. So it's just got everything. It's such a good film. And that is going to be a problem, I think, for us today, Lewis. How can we encapsulate exactly this film in a half an hour podcast while including some of our classic trivia quiz and humorous quips?
That's the trouble, isn't it? Whole books have been written about this film. You know, films have been made about this film.
Yeah.
So really, I think all we can do is just talk about our favourite bits.
Yeah, our favourite bits, our own particular take on it.
Yeah.
And speaking of which, trivia quiz!
Yay!
Trivia!
Quiz!
Trivia!
Quiz!
Trivia, trivia, trivia!
Quiz, quiz, quiz! Quiz!
Okay, question one. The film opens with Martin Sheen in a hotel room.
Mm-hmm.
What was the unusual and, to be honest, slightly disturbing thing about the filming of that first scene?
Is that because he just made it up as he went along? He was actually drunk, wasn't he, at the time? And they just said, yeah, he just said, just film me.
Yeah, that's quite right. Martin Sheen was drunk. It was completely unscripted. Yeah. And for those of you who haven't seen it, the first scene is him basically going nuts in a hotel room, punching a mirror, cutting his hand, which he genuinely did.
Crazy.
Apparently, also he threatened Francis Ford Coppola. And people were a little bit worried. But brilliant opening scene. Powerful opening scene.
Do you see how small his eyes were in that film? Tiny, tiny little bit.
Yeah, very unnerving.
Very unnerving.
But when I read that, I was like, oh my God. Because I just thought that was a fantastically well-acted scene.
No, it's
him just being mad. Excellent.
It's amazing.
Question two. Francis Ford Coppola has a little cameo in the film. What is his cameo?
Oh, he plays a film director, doesn't he? Or a TV film director.
That's right, yeah.
Brilliant. Don't look into the camera.
Exactly.
Don't look into the camera.
While they're going onto a beach, brilliantly shouting at them, don't look in the camera, don't look in the camera. Excellent, well done. And finally, question three. What film is the scene featuring Charlie Sheen and his father, Martin Sheen, referencing not only Apocalypse Now, but another film they had both been in?
Is this Hot Shots?
Yes.
Part deux?
Yes. You can see. Yes, it is. Can you remember what they do? Can you remember the scene?
I think, don't they pass each other in boats?
That's right. And they both point at each other and go, I loved you in Wall Street.
That's it.
Well done. 3 out of 3.
Yes. Oh, wow. That was good. So my Apocalypse Now knowledge comes to the fore. Okay, your turn. First question. What's written on the front of Kilgore's helicopter?
I can't remember.
Death from above.
Oh, okay. That's a tough one.
If you were paying attention.
Yeah. It's a 2.5 hour film. That's a lot to take in.
All right, question two. How old was Lawrence Fishburne when shooting began?
I know this. He was 14.
14? Can you imagine?
He lied. 14. And he is credited, of course, as Larry Fishburne.
Larry
which
Fishburne.
I think he should have kept.
Yeah. Larry good.
Larry. Larry's, good. Larry's, you know, kind of relaxed.
It's good. Chill out, Fishburne. Question three. What kind of a chef is Chef?
Oh, he's a... I can't remember the exact the exact term, but he's a sauce chef.
That's right, he creates saucier.
Saucier, that's it. A saucier.
Saucier.
A nice little just extra element there.
Exactly. What do you do? Make sauces.
So as I was saying earlier, the performances in this film are just
phenomenal, isn't it?
Okay, let's go through them. Like, so we've got Martin Sheen.
Shino.
Well,
we've already said he punched a mirror.
He had a heart attack while making this film.
Labeled as heat exhaustion in the programme.
I know. Unbelievable.
Apparently, Coppola didn't want the studio to find out that he'd had a heart attack.
Well, because so he went back to work only a month after the heart attack.
Crazy.
Didn't he have to, he had to walk half a mile to get help or something?
Yeah, he had to crawl half a mile.
Oh, God.
And when he was out, they got his brother Joe Estevez to do some, to act as a double for him. They flew him over.
Oh, really?
So in some scenes where you see supposedly Martin Sheen from the back is actually Joe.
I know it's a silly thing to say, but my God, he looks so much like Charlie Sheen. When they were young, they looked like the spitting image of each other.
Yeah.
It's bizarre.
Yeah.
I don't look like my dad that much. You know, that is genuinely
weird.
Are
you saying he's a clone?
Yes, I am. Or that Martin Sheen is a vampire. Have we ever seen them together other than in Hot Shots Part 2 and
all the time
and Wall Street? Other than those two films. And let's be honest, films use trickery. Have we seen them in the same room? But anyway, Martin just an amazing, amazing performance.
Yeah.
Just carries this film.
Mm. He didn't have to do much, that's the thing. Like, in the sense that he didn't say much. He hardly had any dialogue in the film at all, really.
It's all in the eyes.
All in the eyes.
It is, it really is, though. It's incredible. He just, and he does the voiceover, doesn't he?
Well, he does the voiceover, yeah.
But he has a, I don't know, he brings an energy to it. Mm. I can't quite put my finger on what it is.
He's like a brooding presence on that boat, you know. Yeah. Particularly in that scene where they stop the sampan to search it.
Yeah,
he's just kind of suddenly, you're like, oh God, you know,
he's one to watch. Yeah.
And he's clearly, you know, he's becoming Kurtz himself, you know, as he goes up the river. And eventually that is kind of his fate. You can see it on the... And it's just amazing kind of performance that just builds and builds and builds all the way through
the
course of the film.
Exactly. I think that is the key. All these things, the elements just build slowly over the course of the film. Then you've got...
Well, we've got to mention Fatty Brando. Big old Brando.
I suppose he's the other big... I mean, he's the thing everyone always talks about with this film.
Wee big!
Fortunately, at the point where he is essentially insane, where he hadn't bothered to learn the script, hadn't read the book... Hadn't turned up way overweight, but these things forced Francis Ford Coppola to use him really well to film him in shadow, to make him this massive monster almost.
Yeah, definitely. Originally, he was meant to be kind of a tall, kind of gangly. The character in the book is like a tall, kind of gangly guy.
Yeah.
And here, it's more like a brooding god, isn't it?
Even though Marlon Brando, I think, is something like 5'10", the way they shot him to try and make him look about 6.5 feet.
Yeah, and I think they use doubles for when he appears in shadow. When you see him leaning against that kind of doorway, that's not him. That's like a body double.
And in a way, by not having him in the film too much, just having him saying these strange philosophical bits and bobs... makes him more, you know, it makes him something unknowable, makes him more a bigger thing.
Mm.
I think if you had lots of him in the film, then the mystery of the character, how he managed to convince all these people to go with him, would go. Because you'd be like, well, really? All those people on his side? But by using him so sparingly, you can say, well, obviously there is something there. There is something almost...
Exactly. The key thing is you never see him committing any atrocities or anything like that.
No.
You only ever hear about it.
Yeah.
Or see the aftermath of it. You never actually see him doing anything.
Or even telling anyone
to do anything. He's just a kind of almost like a shadowy, unknowable figure.
Yeah, yeah. And then you've got a couple of little, not cameo performances as such, but little parts of the film. You've got Robert Duvall playing...
Colonel Kilgore.
Apparently, originally that character was going to be called Colonel Carnage. Which sounds like a bad Marvel villain.
Yeah, that's true.
Sounds like Doctor Doom with his henchman Colonel Carnage.
Well, Robert Duvall gets some of the best lines in the film as well.
He does, yeah.
Some of the most quotable lines.
Exactly, you know, I love the smell of napalm in the morning.
Charlie, don't surf.
It's a really charismatic performance as well.
Yeah,
even though... I suppose there's that line where he just goes, someone like that, he's just going to breeze through this war.
Yeah.
He's almost
without a scratch on him.
And I love that. Like, and during the parts of the thing where they're actually going into battle and everyone's ducking every time there's an explosion, he just stands completely upright, just looking around. Almost looking bemused that everyone keeps ducking. It's just like, what's wrong? Why are you doing that?
Yeah, craziness. But I mean, that scene is just phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal. Like, the bits where they're airlifting the cow just always stick in my mind. Airlifting, what is going on there?
Yeah, exactly. It's really good in that way. Just having, again, that kind of dreamlike quality to it. Or that particular scene has a weird sort of red filter as well.
That's right.
The whole thing.
And they airlift the cow and then someone's giving mass. And it's like...
Yeah, exactly.
Just madness. Explosions going off all around.
Exactly. Yeah, and then, of course, you've got people surfing as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, just every element just sort of suggests that kind of the sense of, like, there's no one in control here.
Yeah,
everyone just seems to be making up their own rules. There's no plan. It's just absolute insanity. Then, of course, talking of insanity, you've got the king of 60s insanity. You've got Dennis Hopper.
Yeah, this is his comeback film. He was in The Wilderness before this.
Great that he infects the film with 60s insanity.
I don't think we can blame him for the problems that Apocalypse Now went in, you know, during the filming. But,
I don't know, there are a lot of parallels, I would say, between this and Easy Rider in the sense of Just a film that's just getting out of control. Just loads and loads and loads and loads and loads of things being filmed.
Yeah, no, it's true. Apparently each...
The death of the 60s.
Yeah. A couple of films, 200 hours of footage.
Yeah. Oh.
200 hours. Imagine trying to edit that down. It's bad enough trying to edit the podcast.
Probably they don't cough as much as we do. Or make silly mistakes and mispronounce words. So, yeah, it probably was easier in that way.
Fair enough.
Originally, Dennis Hopper was going to play a Green Beret, I think.
That's right, yeah.
And then
yeah.
just talking to, I think, a friend of his who was a war photographer. He said, you should make him war photographer. War photographers are mad. So that's what they did.
Just set him off talking. I think a lot of his dialogue was actually just, he made it up on the spot.
But, of course, at the heart of all these performances is Francis Ford Coppola. Forcing under pretty extreme circumstances to get these performances. I mean, how did he do it? It's essentially, it's about every person other than Robert Duvall, who seems, you know, like a professional. Mm. All the others are just mad. And he's trying to have to cope with them in the Philippines after, you know, you've got, I mean, God. It's an insane story, isn't it? Yeah. You've got sets being washed away by storms.
The shoot was meant to take 17 weeks. I think it took 16 months.
You got millions and millions of dollars. It was like within the first 10 weeks, I think, it was over $2 million over budget.
Yeah, and they barely shot any film.
Oh, my God. I mean, well, of course, they actually made a... They released, in 1991, they released a film which was the making of this film.
Yes, Heart of Darkness.
It was... Done by Eleanor Coppola, his wife, wasn't it? Is it Eleanor?
I think it's, yeah, Eleanor, yeah. It was Eleanor Coppola. And she filmed it while, she filmed a lot of the footage while they were kind of filming. And then these editors came along and spliced it all together later.
Yeah, yeah.
With some kind of contemporary interviews.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've not seen it. I really want to.
No, well, certainly just reading about it, just the story is just, God.
I read a bit of the background of Apocalypse Now when I was reading that book, Easy Riders, Raging Bulls, by Peter Biskind, which is a phenomenal book. Phenomenal book. But yeah, it just sounds absolutely crazy. And I don't know how Coppola actually managed to finish it. It was just, everything that could go wrong went wrong.
Well, he went to, he had a couple of releases, didn't he? He showed it to a few people and it got pretty poor feedback. And then he it was shown at Cannes, not quite finished or almost finished.
Yeah.
And of course it won the
Palme d'Or.
Palme d'Or. Which I guess gave the studio perhaps the impetus, and Francis Ford got the impetus to actually finish the damn thing.
Yeah.
To actually properly get it out there.
And it was actually genuinely successful in the end, you know.
Yeah.
It made about 150 million, which is a lot back then, you know.
Yeah.
So even though it cost something like 30 million to make, which is a huge amount at the time, actually it made back a lot.
Excellent.
Let me say that again.
No, let's give it that. So this of course is the last great 70s movie, released in 1979.
Can we say this is the last great 70s movie? What about Alien? That's quite good, but that's a different genre, right?
That is a different genre. This is the last of that, you know, maverick, fantastically talented but mad director, studios throwing money at them with the hope that they will create a piece of art.
You could say it's the pinnacle of the auteur movement from the 70s, but also its downfall.
Yeah, and it ended up destroying it. And of course, the man who went on to pretty much destroy those type of movies, George Lucas, was originally down to direct this film.
Imagine if Lucas had directed this.
Yeah.
What a big pile of shit it would have.
Well, he kind of saw it more as a black comedy.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
And you can see it working in that way. You could imagine a version of Apocalypse Now, which is a black comedy. It still probably would have been an interesting film, but I don't think it would have been the piece of art that this film is.
No,
and I think it really does. It approaches the level of art, or it is a piece of art.
Definitely. It's astonishing. I mean, it's one of those films that you just can't take your eyes off the screen. What crazy thing's going to happen next?
I think it captures so perfectly war, or at least that particular war.
Definitely. Yeah.
It is the perfect Vietnam film.
And like you said earlier, it's more like a dream. As you go further up the river, it just becomes more and more dreamlike.
Yeah.
And the stuff that's happening just doesn't make any sense. You know, it's like, why is this happening? Why is this happening? Where are these people? People are shooting at nothing, you know.
Yeah.
It's yeah, it just draws you in and keeps you going to the end.
And it, what it does as well, it kind of gets across as just how unwinnable that war was.
Yeah.
Just, it looks, the jungles, everything about it just looks so alien. You just think, what were the Americans doing there?
Yeah. And it's a weird thing, isn't it? Because, like, you see, particularly in the scene with Kilgore, of the Americans just attacking the village with everything they've got. You know, there's a ridiculous imbalance of firepower.
Yeah.
You know, this.
And you just think, well, how. Yeah, because you, at the beginning of that scene, you're like, how did the Americans struggle? Like, it just seems easy.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're just going into essentially a lot of fishermen. And then, of course, it's just the sneaky. You got a woman who you assume is, oh, well, what's happened to her? And she runs over and just chucks a grenade into the helicopter. And you just think, oh, you know, all bets are off here.
Yeah, that's it. They can't. They don't understand them. They can't fight against them because they don't understand them.
So is this pro-war or anti-war?
It's interesting, that question. Because, like, before today, I wouldn't even have thought it would be pro-war. I've seen the film several times, and not once did I think, yeah, this is really celebrating war. It was like, no, this is awful. Like, you would never want to do this. You know, this is the ridiculous kind of...
Waste
of life and resources and just craziness that goes on. How could this ever be pro-war? But then, you know, we were talking a bit before the podcast.
Yeah.
And I was reading a bit more about it, and some people put forward some arguments. Well, actually, in some ways, it is pro-war, particularly in the depiction of Kurtz.
Yeah.
In the sense that, you know, Kurtz is incredibly ruthless, but he has success because he's ruthless.
Yes. Like, they say that he orders the murder of three high-ranking South Vietnamese officials because he thinks they're spies. And then a little bit later, it kind of is just they probably were spies because all the kind of insurgent activity just disappeared after those three people were killed. In a way, you could argue that it's saying that the only way to win in a mad war is to be just as mad yourself.
Yeah.
And why Kurtz is getting those results, because he is willing to do horrifically brutal things, just as the Viet Cong are.
But on the other hand,
quite... Not that the Americans, the Americans also obviously did some pretty brutal things.
Yeah, in this film, there's some pretty brutal things done by Americans. But
let's just say, I'm just very conscious. I don't want to get people upset. Obviously, the Vietnam War is a very contentious issue. But we're just talking about using the framework of this film, what this film is saying about the Vietnam War. And it's almost arguing that the only way to win that war is just to be as nuts as them. Just to, they tell that story about the children who were, the Vietnamese children who were vaccinated against polio. And then a Viet Cong went in and chopped off all the arms of those children.
Yeah.
Apparently based on a true story.
Really?
That someone had
heard. God, that's horrific.
Yeah, I know. Gosh. And, but then again, you see Kurtz doing things like chopping off heads.
Yeah.
Hanging people up to die. Mm. Just torturing. Just being just as brutal as that.
But it's quite... On the other hand, the film quite clearly depicts this as evil, you know. You could argue perhaps maybe... You could see how people would be sucked in by Kurtz. But at the same time, the whole thing about going up the river, the parting of the gates of hell, chef saying, like, this place is the most evil place I've ever felt.
Yeah, well, he says something like, I was always frightened my soul would go to hell, but hell can't be worse than this place.
Yeah.
Kind of Kurtz's last lines, the horror of the horror. So even though he's done all this stuff, he appreciates that it's horrific, but I suppose perhaps in a weird sense of duty, because he has to do it, because he thinks that's the only way the war's going to be won.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an interesting... You could talk about it for hours, couldn't you?
Well, and people certainly do. There have been books and all sorts published.
How could we even hope to cover a fraction
of
this?
What were you thinking doing this film? We should have stuck to Zardoz.
Zardoz. The last great 70s film.
Yes. Yeah, you can draw a direct line between them.
Yeah, that's it. Well, this is a good example, actually. You could draw a direct line between them because, Zardoz was a direct result of, Deliverance. John Borman putting an amazing film together and the studio just saying, okay, here's a load of money, go and make a great film. And he made Zardoz. Whereas they did the same thing with Coppola after he made The Godfather, and he was such a huge success. They basically said, okay, you can have as much money you want, just go and make us...
And of course, Deliverance is an analogy for Vietnam.
There we go. That's it. We've come full circle. We've come full circle. Excellent. And Zardoz is an analogy for...
So, favourite scenes. Seems a bit strange to reduce this incredible film to just some the best bits. But what are the best bits of the Apocalypse Now film?
What are the best bits? Well, I've already talked about the Kilgore scene quite a bit. The Ride of the Valkyries, which is a clearly amazing bit. One of my favourite scenes is with the bridge. I think it's the Durangi Bridge or something like that, where there's no one in charge. The people are just shooting in the trees.
Definitely.
And it's like, soldier, who's in charge here? Ain't you?
Well, and then the other great line, he goes, do you know who's in charge here? And she goes, yes. And just walks away.
Yeah.
Just saying, we know that I don't know, the madness of war is in charge here. Or whatever, or the devil, or something. That's brilliant.
It's a great scene. And the music in that scene, the weird kind of fairground music playing in the background. And then you get a bit of, I think it's the Doors again, kind of on the radio. Maybe it's on the Doors. And just this great kind of bizarre atmosphere that it conjures up. It sticks in the mind so well.
I think just when they first, just were on the boat and they arrive at the USO show.
Yeah, with the Playmates.
With the Playmates. But not that actually, but just as they arrive, it's like a fairground in the middle of Vietnam.
Yeah.
And they just sound like, what? And they're like, this is the most surreal thing I've ever seen.
Yeah.
So, would you recommend this film?
Oh, definitely. If you haven't seen this, then you're clearly an idiot.
Well, I have seen it.
You've seen it now, so you're fine. Sunday,
so I'm no longer an idiot. It's official. Can you get that? Can I get a certificate? I agree. It's brilliant.
It's brilliant. And it gets better every time I watch it.
Yeah. It is, if you only see one Vietnam War film, see this one.
Yeah. And then watch Jacob's Ladder.
And then read Teddy Bear's Picnic by Kim Newman. Perfect. So as this is our 50th podcast, we actually have an extra special secret sponsor this week.
Ooh.
Oh, yes. Now, over the last few podcasts, I have been desperately trying to get people to like our Facebook page.
It's been a bit of a crusade.
It has. We've been stuck. We were stuck on 49 likes for so long. And it just became frustrating. I was like, one more person. That's all that they need to do. All they need to do is like us.
I wasn't that bothered about it. It clearly upset you.
And I'm very pleased to say that friend of the show, an old-time listener, Owen Boyle, the Boiler.
The Boiler.
The Boiler, was kind enough to like us, and he was our 50th person. And not only that...
Not only that, there's more.
Not only that, but the Boiler recommended Apocalypse Now.
Well done.
So, Owen, you are at the heart of the 50th 101 Films podcast.
You love him.
Yes, I do. Owen, this is me saying to you, I love you.
Who are you looking at? You were just looking at the wall then.
I was looking at the wall with my massive picture of Owen Boyle that I printed off Twitter. let's scare him off.
Speaking of Twitter, you can follow Owen on Twitter at @E_BOYLER.
Yeah, E_Boiler. Yeah. I don't think he has a podcast. I don't think he has a blog. He's a modern man. He just tweets.
Just a lovely man.
He's just getting the message out there in 140 characters.
That's it.
So
it's everyday life.
I hope, sadly, there is no other prize for being such an important part of 101 Films history. But I hope this is enough.
Exactly. So, that's it.
That's it. We come to the end of our 50th podcast.
You can take off the party hats now.
Yeah, no. Well, what we're going to do? Well, I'm going to cook Lewis dinner afterwards. And little facts for you fat fans. We're actually recording this on Valentine's Day. So me and Lewis are now going to have dinner together on Valentine's Day.
Those rumours, that's how they start.
These rumours are slowly coalescing into hard facts. So yes, we're going to have a lovely Valentine's meal together.
Yeah. So if you've got any films for us to watch, then please email us at 101filmsyoushouldhaveseen@gmail.com.
You can also follow us on Twitter at 101films or like our Facebook page. Like it. Get me the 51st. We'll mention you in the 51st podcast. Probably not, though.
No, probably not. And look at our blog at 101filmsyoushouldhaveseen.com.
Okay, so join us next week for the 51st. We'll be over halfway then.
Yeah, see you on the flip side.
Excellent. Bye.
Bye.
'Orleans. That's very important. They do love their food down there, don't they?
What are you saying?
Just saying they're...
saying they're fat?
No, I'm saying it's a city full of people who enjoy the finer things in life.
People in New Orleans...
That and exposing their boobs and throwing beads at each other.
God, the people in New Orleans, they're going to come after you once they hear this.
They love that. It's part of the whole thing.
They're going to come after
that and big, colourful funerals.
Jesus, you're in trouble.
And Gambit from the X-Men. That's all my New Orleans knowledge.
Gambit. It's good we've got at least one comic book reference.